From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 8th day of December 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dave Chatterton. He's at Strategic Farm Marketing. Wayne Nelson is out of the office this afternoon. Gary Schnucki will join us to discuss ECO. Again, this time we'll talk about premiums and what the cost might look like. We'll use Champaign County as the base of operations for that conversation. And then we'll take up the weather forecast with Don Day from Day Weather and take a look at the agricultural energies with Stephen Platt at Archer Financial Services on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Corn futures finished the nearby March contract at $4.19¾ today, down 4¼. The May at 3¾ lower at $4.23. And December at next year at $4.08½, down 2½ cents. January beans 12¾ lower, $11.45¾ the settlement price. The March at $11.51½, down 11. And next year's November, $10.41¼, 2½ cents lower. Bean meal at $3.76.90, down $5.40. The bean oil day today down 59 cents at $37.44. Wheat futures soft red at $5.70 in the March. That's down 7½. And the hard red March, 8½ lower at $5.37. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby contract at 107.85 for the afternoon. That's down 15 cents. In the December, the feeders in the January is 22½ lower at 137.57½. And lean hogs for the day at $65.60, up 65 cents for the afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Dave Chatterton now joins us from Strategic Farm Marketing right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Hey, Dave, thanks for being with us this afternoon. Tell me what happened in Chicago today.
Thanks for having us, Todd. And kind of a down day today, liquidation across the board here. Futures finished lower here with soybeans kind of placing the decline here, and we continue to see fund liquidation here. And we're kind of also back to testing kind of these key support levels from a technical level. So let's say this 1040, 1050 area for March corn and, you know, maybe 415 plus or minus for beans and 415 for corn here as we go forward. And I think, you know, another day here where we didn't see any export sales announcements from the FSA or the USDA here. We've got weather in Brazil that's showing some improvement here. So this combination of kind of an improving South American rainfall profile, a slowdown in new export interest for U.S. products here, and a large managed money fund long here coming into a key USDA report, I think all leading to a little bit of trepidation here and a little bit of liquidation ahead of the report on Thursday, Don.
Well, what do you think about this Thursday report? Usually December is kind of a yawner. Anything that will change?
Well, that's what I guess makes me stand up in my chair a little bit. And typically the December report is somewhat of a yawner here. The USDA will not adjust production or yield on the supply side, but they can certainly come in, and we're looking for them, you know, be watching very closely what they do with the export demand, the ethanol number, the crush number, as well as the South American crop estimates. But, you know, expectations are for U.S. carryout numbers to decline, albeit slightly. You're talking less than 10 million in corn, a very small change in wheat, and 20 or 22 million bushels compared on the average trade guess for soybeans. I really think that number in soybeans, as long as it's coming down, it's telling the trade that, hey, we're in the same situation. But I wouldn't be surprised if the USDA is a little bit more aggressive here than they normally would be based on what they're dealing with here. And, you know, when you look at this U.S. soybean carryout situation, Todd, I think it's still very delicate. If we're a 190 projection last month and, you know, talking about a 168 or a 170 this month, general pipeline supply in the U.S. for soybeans nationally considered maybe 90 million bushels. So there's just not a lot of room for error. And I think, you know, prices have to find a point that, I guess, protects that last incremental bit of soybeans that we have available.
Given all of that, the crop in South America has been put in the ground. It's up and growing. It's getting some rainfall now. Will USDA adjust downward, do you suppose, output from the countries there? And what does the supply on the world market look like?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if USDA takes a pass this month on the South American crop. The private crop estimates are coming down, but not by a lot. I mean, on the low side, we've seen some 127 and 128, so 128 million metric ton type of estimates. The top side is still up near 135. The average trade guess coming in is maybe it's not even a million metric tons lower than last month. Those are kind of tweaks. If you keep in mind that last year they had a record crop at that 125 million metric ton number, then you know, even with a little bit of a yield loss here because of the acreage increase, we're still seeing a record crop. I think the issue that you pointed to is really more about timing and when that crop will be available. And when we look at you know, at what's going on with world supply, we know that we're getting tighter for soybeans. Even if they have a record crop, we've got a little bit of a hole here to fill, Todd, in that last half Jan and Feb time period because their soybean crop is going to be late, even if it is record large. They've got a very large book, let's say 6 million metric tons on with China for last half, you know, out of Brazil for last half June, or excuse me, last half Jan and February. And so finding the bushels to kind of fill that gap, China's crushing 2 million metric tons a week, so that's about 70 or 72 million bushels a week. And again, kind of coming back to where we stand, we don't have a lot of excess supply here in the U.S. to fill that. So there's a crop size issue and there's a timing issue around that South American crop.
Anything that you've been thinking about you want to make sure producers understand at this time?
Well, you know, I think you have to realize we're in a weather market. It's just a South American-based weather market at this particular point. But we've also seen a fundamental change or kind of a shift in the marketplace here where we've gotten to a point where stocks have tightened significantly and prices have reacted, and they've done so without a large supply disruption. You can argue that the U.S. yield this fall was not as big as it once could have been, and things in South America are maybe encountering a few problems off of what their top end can be. But in general, these are not, you know, large declines in production that are causing this. This has been a demand-driven rally, and so I think it's an encouraging point looking forward, Todd, in the fact that, you know, we've been playing defense in the grain marketing arena for really the last four, even five crop years. This is a year when hopefully we can play a little bit more offense. So certainly be looking at values here. I think farmers are pretty well caught up on where they're at on the 2020 crop. Looking at 21, it's not too early to have a little bit on, but maybe not get too aggressive. But certainly, you know, I think you want to have a mentality here that's a little bit different than what it has been in the past several years.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Dave Chatterton. He is with Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, joined by Gary Schnitke, agricultural economist from here on campus, to discuss his latest article on the FarmDoc Daily website, exploring ECO. That's the enhanced coverage option. It's a new policy that dovetails for crop insurance that farmers and others will be signing up for in the month of March. Gary, thank you for being with us. I take it you've got some of the premiums and what this might cost and cover.
Yeah, so again, this year, ECO will be available for the first time, and we calculated some quotes for a Champaign County case. And just to give you a feel for next year, RP 85% in our example, which is pretty representative, would be a $14.52 premium. ECO will provide protection from either 90% down to 86% or 95%. Down to 86%. So if you bought an 85% policy for $14.52, you could get a band of county coverage for $7.18 and a band of coverage from the 95% down to 86% for $19.90.
There's a big difference in the premium cost for the coverage levels there.
Yeah, so if you go from 90 to 95, you increase the premium from $7.18 to $19.90, roughly a $13 increase. And yeah, if you look at that range from 95 to 90, that's going to trigger a lot, and that's why the premium is going up.
Farmers, as you have made note in other FarmDoc Daily articles, are likely to spend less than $20 an acre on crop insurance. Do you suppose they'll sign up for ECO? And, well, maybe a better question is, should they?
Yeah, well, we will see on both of those. But if at those prices, you would be above $20 on a 85% coverage level. Some might choose that. And just to give you a feel, if you bought 85% and the, all the coverage level you could get, you would be spending something like $25 per acre in a Champaign County case. And that's an 85% coverage level on the RP policy. I suspect many farmers will back away from that. If I were giving advice at this point, I would still say keep that RP coverage level as high as possible, and then look at these county bands above it. And they will provide some good price protection in particular, but they will be costly.
I recall having conversations with you about SCO and using it as a way to lower the total cost of crop insurance or the premium cost. Is ECO in that same boat? And if so, what would the cash price have to be in order for that to work?
Yeah, that's a good question. Let's say you wanted to spend $15 an acre in Champaign County on corn. You could do that roughly with an 85% coverage level, or you could do it with an 80% coverage level, which would be $7.20, and a 90% ECO, which would be another $7. So that would get you close to that $15. That would leave off the SCO coverage, which is still available. So the ECO would go from 90% down to 86%. And then if you want the 86% down to 80% SCO coverage, you would have to add a $4 item to that. So you can buy down the RP, buy SCO, and keep, you know, a premium in the $14 to $15 range, but you are giving up farm level coverage. You are buying more county level coverage, which won't match your farm as well. But you do get a higher coverage level, which may be warranted if you want some additional, more price protection, because a 90% will trigger, takes a higher price to trigger than an 80 or 85.
Do you have more work yet to do on this?
We will continue to work on these comparisons as we go throughout the year. We've written two articles already, one just a background on ECO. Here we're comparing premiums. Future work will give a feel for how often ECO will trigger payments. So we will continue to look at this new option.
Hey, Gary, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome, Todd.
Gary Schnitke is an agricultural economist here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. Read more from him on the Farm Doc Daily website at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Let's check the weather forecast now with Don Day. He's a day weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Gray skies here, Don. Cool, but looks like we'll get a little warmer as the week goes along. How about in your area?
Yeah, you know, we're looking at the month of December so far for a large part of the central United States. It's been, you know, okay. Really hasn't been bad. We've had a couple of snow events up in New England, up into the far northeastern areas of the United States. But December started off pretty tame, and at least through the rest of this week, and then the start of the weekend, that's how it's going to go. Now, after that, we do see precipitation chances go up in the form of rain and snow, and we also see it getting a little bit colder. There's one thing that we always take a look at this time of year is where the cold air is, where is it likely to come in, and do we see anything that looks severely cold as we get ourselves towards the second half of December. Right now, it looks colder for a large part of the United States this weekend and into next week, but nothing really terribly cold. We certainly see a lot of cold air building in Siberia, up in the higher latitudes in northwest Canada. But so far, it looks like, at least for the next week or so, the U.S. will escape any severe cold.
So, well, sometimes during this time of year, we talk about winter weather that's making its way across maybe the northern plains or some of the livestock areas, and it causes a problem. I take it you don't see anything like that at all?
Not in the next week. But one thing we're keeping an eye on is the middle to the end of next week, the Christmas week, and then the week going into the new year, with that cold air I just referenced that's building in those higher latitudes, if given the opportunity, we will see snow and colder weather going into those northern plain states that you just mentioned. So it may be a little bit delayed, but the potential for the last 10 days of December, early November, rather early New Year's, that is something we need to keep an eye on, a trend towards colder weather for the lower 48, especially the northern tier.
The rain has begun to fall in parts of South America, especially some of those drier regions in Brazil into Argentina. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, the weather really has picked up there. It's a trend that's going to likely continue. In fact, many areas of Brazil looking at near to above normal amounts of rainfall coming. Over the next 10 to 14 days, long-range charts are very bullish at producing more rain in those areas. Now, there's always winners. There's always losers. There will be some maybe drier areas in the northeastern parts of Brazil. But for the most part, I would say it's a more favorable forecast for rain. And not only south, southern and central areas of Brazil, but to central northern areas of Argentina as well.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate it, Don.
Thank you.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday afternoon. Don't forget that the Farm Doc Illinois Farm Economics Summits are beginning to wrap up. There were five of them total in the month of December. There are two left. They're this coming Friday and Tuesday at 11 a.m. Central Time. Friday, we'll talk about policies and what changes might come under President-elect Biden's administration and what that might mean on the farm. And then on Tuesday of next week at 11 o'clock, again, the Illinois Farm Economic Summit's online. It's a webinar. It's free, and you can still sign up at willag.org or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. We'll talk about the price of farmland, kind of macroeconomics, that with Bruce Sherrick. He is with a campus here, an ag economist, and heads up the Farmland Research Center, TIAA. So make sure that you get yourself signed up at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I had the pleasure of seeing that Stephen Platt was with us this morning as we talked about crop insurance online for today's webinar. That'll be up on the website too at Farm Doc Daily as an archive very shortly. Steve, thank you for being with us. And we talked about crop insurance. We've already heard in this half hour, of course, from Gary Schnitke about ECO at SEO, some of the things you heard about this morning. And we're glad you were with us this morning. And I guess we'll get to talk a little bit about agricultural energies this afternoon. Thanks for doing that too.
Well, thank you for doing such a great conference. I think it's been real beneficial, at least from my perspective. Talking about the policy issues, I don't know how long you have next week. I guess it will be an hour too, but there's a lot of policies we're looking at in terms of the energy markets. The market has been quite firm. We've seen the crude oil rising as much as $5 over the past month. Diesel running at 141 versus 125 last month, and gasoline's about 10 cents higher. So we are paying more for energy here over the past month, and it certainly has come back from the low levels we saw back in March. One big influence lately has been on the refining margins. Those have certainly improved. We've seen some refiners actually shut down, one in Louisiana just here over the past few days, because of the weak margins which had and have been prevailing. Those margins, which are the profit margin for converting a barrel of crude into the different products for diesel, are like around $13 per barrel. They were as low as $8. And last year were probably around $23 per barrel. So we've seen a lot of movement in the margins. In terms of the flat prices, I'm actually a little bit hesitant to kind of chase the market up here. But I do see those margins still remaining strong. So the product markets might hold up much better than the crude. This past week, we had OPEC actually show a modest increase in production of 500,000 barrels. They had planned initially an increase of as much as 2 million barrels, but they backed off from that because of the demand considerations caused by the pandemic. With the vaccine coming on, it's created a lot of uncertainty. Another factor certainly is policy, not only with respect to crude oil and crude oil production in some of the shale areas, but also in terms of the renewable fuel standard and tightening up of some of those conditions, which already has forced some changes in the RIN market for biodiesel and ethanol. Some of these waiver uncertainties as we wind down the Trump administration are holding over and have really supported RIN prices for both biodiesel and renewable fuels such as ethanol. And that is something to watch as well, because we're going to be looking at some policy changes with the new administration, certainly in terms of climate change and carbon output. Certainly, it's going to cost more, I think, for people on some of those issues, which will make renewable sources a lot more attractive. So as we move into the new year and new administration, a lot of things are on tap that we have to be aware of as we move forward.
On crude oil and the margins that the refiners are working with, is this a demand-only issue or is it supply side?
Well, for diesel, it was initially the supply side. Due to the aviation industry collapse and the lack of flying, you had a lot of jet kero, which is essentially diesel, move into the diesel channels, producing a large increase in stock levels. That situation, they did start to moderate, producing more gasoline rather than diesel, helping to alleviate the burdensome stock situation. So we're in a more normal situation. As we move through the winter, you'll get some heating oil demand out of the Northeast, which has helped support that margin pretty dramatically from as low as 8 in the January contract to around 13 currently.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you taking the time and explaining that to me. You have a good day now.
You too. Thank you.
Stephen Platt is with Archer Financial Services. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon and came to you from Illinois Public Media.